Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 373. I really had to think about that. Of the Distraction Pieces podcast. My name is Scroobius Pip. How you doing, y'all? Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the first two that came out this week. I did a behind the album for Angles on Monday, a behind the album for Logic of Chance on Wednesday. And today we round off the trilogy of Le Sac versus Pip albums with a behind the album of Repent, Replenish, Repeat. Yeah, I really enjoyed recording these and revisiting these. It was nice. As I've mentioned on the intro on Monday, to this day, people don't know that I stopped making music, which makes me know that you don't really miss it that much. I promise you. Every time I get a message, particularly during this pandemic, when people are like, man, I can't wait for this pandemic to be over so I can come and see you live. It's like, yo, I stopped playing live 6 years ago. If you didn't notice, then you're not missing anything from this pandemic, I promise, with regards to me and my musical endeavours. So yeah, but this is a bit of a nostalgia trip because I really enjoyed going over these records and remembering some of the stories. You can also listen to Dan Lesac's podcast, Falling Forward. He's got a load of good episodes there. You can hear new music, current music, not nostalgia trip shit, from Dan Lesac. You can hear it on Bandcamp, you can hear it on Spotify, you can hear it on Apple, but you can hear the most of it and support people or an individual by going on Dan's Patreon. There's loads of good shit there. At the end of the last episode, I tried to plug my Patreon and I just couldn't do it, man, because in reality, I don't really do much on my Patreon. I do the occasional Patreon Zoom hangout. I've done like three or four in the last year or whatever during the pandemic. Three, maybe two, I don't know. We've done a few. And we do Q&As every now and then, but not really much, I swear. Whereas over at Dan's one, he digs out old demos. He goes through all sorts of dope shit. So that's where the value's at, I swear. I'm going to stop rambling. Oh, I'll tell you where else the value's at. Speechdevelopmentrecords.com. Yeah. Yeah, man, there's some value in there. We've got everything over there. Go and have a browse, honestly. I list all the different things that we have on these episodes every now and then. But just go and have a browse. I swear you'll find some things that surprise you. We just launched our, not just a few months back, our We May Not Be For You And That's Fine sweaters that look really slick. So I'm really pleased with them. Yeah, I'll get into the episode. I want to just quickly thank everyone for all the love for episode one of Debris, the show that I've been working on for a minute now. I got a lot of excited people who had heard me hyping it. I got a lot of excited people who had no idea I was acting now. And I'm in like the first scene. So it kind of caught a few people off guard, but it was all lovely. And yeah, we're every Monday at 10 p.m. on NBC. If you're in America, the UK, there's still deals being negotiated, but you can go and watch the first episode on the first 15 minutes of the first episode on YouTube for free. And you can get to meet my character, Anson Ash, right off the bat, really. But yeah, you know, it's been a week and I'm still constantly bumping a wheelchair sports camp. Yes, I'm a mess. It is a tune. I know a lot of you are feeling it as well because I've had a load of you tweet me about it who'd never heard of wheelchair sports camp and hadn't heard this track. But yeah, go and check it out on YouTube. The video is my shit, massively. The video and the song, but the video, all of it together, it's so dope. This is the third episode of the week. You lucky, lucky things. I'm back next week with more episodes, for sure. Don't doubt that for a second. But for now, this is episode 373 of the Distraction Pieces podcast, and it is behind the album, Repent, Replenish, Repeat. Welcome, welcome. Oh no, I do that in the intro, not in the actual body of the podcast. All right, well, forget that. Hello, it's another behind the album, and it's the last one because I will have done all my albums. Or maybe I could do the Live Edinburgh Fringe DVD. I don't know. But yeah, this is the last album of the behind the album. And it's Repent, Replenish, Repeat, which came out in 2013. Man, that was a while back. That was my last record, potentially ever. Probably ever. I've no plans, as I mentioned all the time, I've no plans to make any more. And at the end of this episode, we'll get a bit of a chat about why that has become such a solid plan. But yeah, it's also my joint proudest moment musically. This album and Distract, like, people often ask what my favourite of my own work is. Weird question, because again, as I've said on all the other ones, I don't listen back to my own stuff. But with a bit of distance between, because I think every time you release a new album, it's your favourite because you've just been working on it. And if it's not your favourite, you wouldn't be putting it out. But with a bit of distance between all of them now, Replenish, Repeat and Distraction Pieces are my joint first. With Angles close behind them, then probably Logic, then No Commercial Breaks, I guess. All of which I've done behind the album episodes for, so go back and dig into them if you haven't already. So we're going to go through, as if this is your first one you've tuned into, we're going to go through and listen to bits, and I'll see what comes up. I don't plan these. We did do a Tim's listening party for this at the start of lockdown, so I had a bit of a refresher then. But yeah, we'll go over things. Opening a record has always been something that we were adamant. Again, me and Dan Lissac and me on my solo stuff, I try and write and structure albums rather than a collection of songs. So making the opening strong, you know, Beat Them a Heart Skip was our opener on Angles and our opener live for ages. Interdiction was my opener on Distraction Pieces and my opener live for ages. And this album was the first one that gave me and Dan a new opener. We started opening with Stunner, I think. Not every show. I think we still did a few as Beat Them a Heart Skip, but Stunner became a bit of an opener. And the story behind getting the beat, Dan sent me the beat, and I'd realised that the only way I could properly take in beats was to download them onto my iPod at the time, to put my headphones on and to go for a walk and listen. Because Dan, the process would be, Dan would send me like 10 beats or 15 beats, and I'd go back with, here's the two or three I think have jumped out immediately. At times, he'd resend the same beat in four different like beat drops, and on the fourth one, I'd be like, oh, this beat's amazing. And he wouldn't mention the fact that I've ignored it three times already. But it was always a case of what jumped out at the time and what instantly felt like it was something I could write to. And on this particular beat drop, Stunner was in there. And it's the most excited I've ever been to receive a beat. It blew me away. I thought, wow, this is the fact that I'm going to get to jump on this beat is mad. On the walk, I text or email, I can't remember, Zane Lowe, to say, when this new album comes, I've got your hottest record in the world for you. Because he does, on his show, he used to do his hottest record in the world right now. And before I'd even written a vocal, I heard this beat, and I was like, Zane, we got you covered. And sure enough, a year or so later, the album came out, and Zane selected it, not aware that this was the one I was talking about, to be clear. And yeah, he went for it. Let's have a bit of a listen to that opener. Again, I've got my Sonos Move on the other side of my desk, so we're getting in-room sound. It was just this beat that just knocked me off my feet. I
I realise I've got loads of things in the way of the speaker, so the sound isn't great. It's not a reflection on... Let me move it. I think the quality of this beat made me write better than I have any right to write. I'm really, yeah, I think a lot of the lyrics on this hold up really well. I think it's quite intricate. I was really pleased with this vocal, and it became an absolute favourite to perform live. It also became something I'd be mocked for, because the fact that in the opening I say the word I with an H. I know it sounds weird. Well, where'd the H come from? I know it sounds weird, and weird has got a Y in the middle. I know it sounds weird, but that's just how I speak. And yeah, this is one of my favourite things that we made. I was really pleased with it. A little insight on the lyrics. As everyone knows, I don't really write true stories. As I mentioned on the Logic of Chance one, there's one track that I wrote as a true story. Everything else is kind of pieced together, particularly relationship songs of a number of relationships. But the hook I started to write when I was in a relationship, because Dad mentioned numerous times that we've never written an actual love song. All of our love songs are actually breakup songs or misery songs or tough relationship songs. And part of that's intentional, because I think there's been loads of love songs written that are great, but it's really hard to write them without them seeming cheesy or shit. So I originally started to write the hook trying to make it a love song, partly about the relationship I was in at the time, but, you know, also just about different moments in my life where I felt that emotion and that being kind of head over heels type thing. Again, I've told this story in the past and people think it's about a specific relationship. But yeah, I was in a relationship, but it was changing it and moving it and twisting it. And then the relationship ended before the song was finished, or before I'd really started on the song properly, if I'm honest. So I added the word have. The world don't revolve around you, but it should. Ain't saying you're perfect, but you're really, really good. Ain't saying I love you, but I probably could. That was the hook. And then the relationship ended, and I was like, let's make it an angry song. I'm far more comfortable in these places. So I just added a have after the could. And all the rest just kind of flowed naturally. The video for this was one of my favourites as well. We shot it under the roundhouse in Camden. And we had to do it as a one shot. And again, it was me back directing our videos for this album after I sat out Logic of Chance, or back having input. Sorry, I didn't direct any on angles, but I had a lot of input. Me and the director would brainstorm a lot of it. Logic of Chance, we got a different director. Distraction Pieces, me and my mates made them. Me, my mate Tom, who was the cameraman, he was as much a director as anyone. My mate Aaron, who was the director, you know, all three of us kind of directed them. So we did that on angles, sorry, on Distraction Pieces. And then for this album, it was me and Tom, I think, just running with it. And yeah, this one became one of our more known videos, I guess. It was a one shot. I'm obsessed with one shots. I think they're so much fun. I'd done a few one shots with solo stuff and always really enjoyed them. So, yeah, this was one of them. And it was a really hot day. We had loads of extras. It was quite intricate because me and Tom had had to plan out where everything is, who moves in and out, how we're going to make it work. And we didn't have any expensive equipment. Tom had made a dolly, so wheels for the camera, out of an old pram of his. That had big wheels because he needed to be able to move in any direction, because we were going in one way, out another way. He's facing at me the whole time. Really hard to direct a whole room full of people when you're on camera and Tom's moving the camera. So we had amazing people helping out, though. Ollie and everyone else were amazing. We also had a few repeat cameos. So Den DeVille, who was an angel in the Look for the Woman video, was in this video with the same angel wings on. I think we had someone from the Letter from God to Man video in there as well, but I can't quite remember. Maddie and Lilla from the who did a merch thing for me where I was releasing these new caps. They were in there. Tons of people, basically. Oh, a few of the people who were in the struggle video, maybe. I can't think. But yeah, it was a lot to do. And by the time we'd got it all set up, it took longer than we'd expected to set it all up and tell everyone where to move and when. Gemma helped out on this. There was loads of good people helping out. So when we actually had time to shoot, we only had time to do, I think, 3 takes, maybe 4 takes. So when the day ended and we had to leave, we didn't know if we had it or not. So the absolute buzz and excitement when we started to go through the takes and go and found one where we've got it and we've nailed it. Ricky Hall played my double in it. So we have this bit where I go slightly off camera because he's a mate of mine and a model. And the reason we became mates was I kept getting tagged in his post because people were saying, is that Scroobius Pip? So we use that to our advantage. Despite me being about a foot taller than him and him being far more handsome, there's a moment where I go off camera and around the other side of the camera in the same outfit, he comes on and starts getting off with a girl and we've got this whole moment and then I appear again and continue the vocal. And yeah, really pleased with that. Another funny thing was when this video came out, an American lady did a video reacting to it, really not happy because she thought it was about a specific relationship of mine and she thought I shouldn't have been going out with people who've got tattoos are damaged or evil, apparently, and all this thing. And I got told about this video while I was up at the Fringe. So I went back to my accommodation and did a live watching of her ramble. And I put that up on YouTube. So it was a good kind of her reacting to Stana, then me reacting to her. So that was a lot of fun. It's amusing. The world's a strange place when you start to put yourself out to everyone's judgment and opinion over the internet. Is there anything else I need to tell you about this one? I don't think so. As said, mad fun to do live. It was our lead single, and this time it felt right. I mentioned on the Logic of Chance one, I felt we chose the wrong lead single because we tried to go what would be most commercially viable rather than what was our stamp of here we are, like with Angles, despite Thou Shalt being the first single, but that's because we didn't have an album. When we had an album, the Beat That My Heart Skipped was our lead single because that was the opening track on the record with my solo record with Distraction Pieces. Introdiction was the lead single because it feels like if we've put together a record where here's how we want to open it, then that should be how people are introduced to it. So let's move on to the next track, because I've done one track and we're 15 minutes in. Another great beat. I love Dan's production on this record. So yeah, this one quite simply is about people who fall asleep on the night bus. At the time, I had my radio show on XFM, and I'd often not record live, but every now and then I'd be in there or be recording late anyway, and I'd get the night bus home. And I always found it just so peaceful and serene that people can fall asleep on that. I also had a mate in Manchester, my mate Lindsay, who I haven't spoken to in years now, who would often... we'd be chatting over text or whatever when she was on her way home from work. It probably only happened a couple of times, but it was at the time I was working on all this, and she'd just go absolutely silent. And, you know, anyone who's got mates who basically, in a completely honest way, the world is a fucked up place. So late night public transport is a dangerous place for women at times. So anytime you're talking to a mate and they go quiet all of a sudden, you're like, I hope everything's okay. And then it just turned out she would just always fall asleep on the night bus home. So yeah, as said, at the time it was more I'd witness a lot of different people who did that, and it was a beautiful thing because there's a serenity in amongst all the madness. It felt like you're looking around at people having fights and being rowdy, and then it feels like everything goes into slow motion, or these people who are asleep are kind of, you know, underwater, and it's this peaceful, serene scene in a hectic world. So yeah, that's what that was about, and a banging beat. Let's move on to the next one. There's a few tracks I'm going to skim quite quickly through because there's three or four that I want to talk about a lot more, and one of them is this, which is one of my favourite bits of work from me and Dan.
She said, I feel numb. I said, that doesn't make sense. Numbness is a lack of feeling. She said, I knew what she meant. And I did. I was just talking. I'm not a pedant, but I was hesitant to let silence walk in. I took her hand and I kissed each knuckle. It didn't register at first, but then she smiled a smile that meant fuck all. I don't think I want to fight it, she said.
So this is Terminal, and it's a really weird song. Again, on every album, there's one or two songs that I'm like, I don't know if this can be a song, but then it happens and it works and it becomes a fan favourite. And yeah, it's a weird little story about someone choosing not to fight a terminal illness. And as it plays out, they've met someone on this night that they're going to just end it all. And they have this little moment of adventure. There's a few origins of this one. So number one, there was a song that I kept trying to write for me and Dan on the last record that was about a couple who've just decided to have one, like they've decided they're going to break up, and rather than being horrible and ugly, they decide to have one more night just celebrating everything that was and then walk away. For some reason I got that idea when listening to Atlantic City by Bruce Springsteen. Put your makeup on, put your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. Everyone dies, baby, that's a fact, but everything that dies one day comes back. Put your makeup on, put your hair up pretty, and meet me tonight in Atlantic City. And that lyric made me think of, you know, everything dies and that's a fact, was me thinking, right, well, relationships end. So that's not what Atlantic City is about, but I like the idea of it being a let's go out with a bang, man. But then the other song that influenced it that spurned it was Chemo Limo by Regina Spektor, where it's someone talking about, particularly in America, where chemo and stuff like that is hugely expensive if you've not got the right insurance or whatever else, or healthcare. And there's a line in that where it's someone gets diagnosed with cancer and they say, I'm not fighting it, because they say I can afford chemo as much as I can afford a limo, and on any given day I'd rather ride a limousine. And again, I loved that idea of going, right, saving my life is going to cost 30 grand, or to have a chance of saving my life is going to cost 30 grand. Fuck that. I'm going to spend 30 grand on going out with a bang. And that kind of all inspired this. The reveal at the end is that they're strangers, that they happen to both be coming out of hospital at the same time, kind of in the waiting room type thing at the same time. And he went in with her or whatever. And she decided, look, she'd just been told it's terminal. That's why it's called Terminal. But she'd just been told it's terminal. And they go and have this adventure and they take pills. And they have a really important part of this was the fact that they kiss. But the kiss was everything, you know. When you're a really young teen, like a kiss, oh my God, it's unimaginable. As you get older, a kiss is a prelude to some kind of sexual interaction, often, you know, that's where it's building to. rather than that being the kind of end goal. And I loved the idea of these two having this moment where that's all it is. It's not going anywhere else. It's not leading to anything else. There's no desire. Everything is that moment. Or more, everything is the moment before. Everything is the moment where their heads are moving slightly closer. And then the kiss. You know, the foreplay is micro movements and nerves of our... Did their head move? Are we going in? Is this... Am I doing... Is this just me? Am I going to get knocked back? Are we both... Oh, my God. And then the moment. And then she jumps up and says, you know, I'll tell you my name. And then she kills herself. Again, it's a choosing... Obviously, I've talked about suicide a lot. It's had a big impact on my life. But I don't like the demonization of suicide. I don't like, even though, you know, a Magician's Assistant on the first album demonizes it quite a bit, but more the fact that it's seen as a weakness or a failure or the traditional religious thing of you'll go to hell. In this song, she wants to take control. She doesn't want to be at the hands of others. She wants to go, right, I'm dying. This is a fact. Now, I want it on my terms. I want to choose. I've had this amazing evening. I want to go out on top. And weirdly, that's something I've been obsessed with in my life for a long time. I didn't even mean to bring this up or go into this, but the only times I've dreamt or fantasized of suicide has... This is so dark and weird, but it's always been a thought of the only time I do it is when things are going amazingly. And I feel, right, I'm happy now. I'm really content. I want to go out on top. I'll end it there. And again, I'm not suicidal. Don't panic, guys. But that's where suicide has always sat in my mind. It's never been when things are really dark or heavy. It's been like I'd always think, yeah, I'll leave it there, actually, because this is getting really weird. But this will come back into conversation later because I didn't realise how much of my life exists in increments of that rather than the fall. Anyway, we'll get to that, trust me. Let's go on to the next one. This is another one. I mentioned on one of the records that there's tracks that I have barely any memory of because they weren't ones that we played live. It's playing about, it's a lyrical dancing. I'm having a bit of enjoyment here. I mean, these kind of tracks, it's amazing when people enjoy them because they've been written purely for me to play about with syllables and wordplay and metaphors and dance about. There's not really a big theme of this song. The hook of I Dream of Heroism, the story behind that is that I've regularly had kind of daydream hero fantasies, I guess, or hero complex of wanting to help people and save people. But, you know, it gets dark because it'll be like I'll be imagining that the train I'm on crashes and I'll be thinking, right, I'll do what I can. I'll help this person. We'll find that the exit's there. Here's what we can do. I can move over that way and we'll get that person out first. And it's just these weird... I don't want the train to crash, but it's the dream of these being in these scenarios and mentally preparing myself to step up, even though these things never happen. But yeah, not much more to tell you about that. But on to the next one. This one gets a lot of love. Another weird one. Because I'm the poor and these walls I walk from wall to wall are full of the types of minds that might sometimes fight the binds of thought paths that we all default to.
need to think each one is someone's daughter. Because I'm the pauper and these walls are walked from wall to wall.
Full of the types of rhymes that might to vibes like the crimes.
Need to think each one is someone's daughter. Cell one is a little padded palace, within which lives a little girl named Alice. For half her life in that room she has been banished. She drinks from the wrong side of the chalice. The girl's damaged each day when I arrive at the front gate. I hear a happy...
So, yeah, this is a funny one, because I remember telling... I've got such a clear memory of me, Dan Lissac and B. Dolan on... It must have been on the Logic of Chance tour, playing in Newcastle and going for a walk after soundcheck, going to find some food, and me telling them about this idea where I'm the porter in a mental hospital and the inmates are all people from... stories that we know, and it turns out these stories are their hallucinations or whatever. So we've got Alice in Wonderland, we've got a what's her name from Peter Pan, and we've got Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz. Is it? Have I got a Wendy in there? I'm not sure if I have. I can't even remember who the people are. But yeah, and these famous stories that we know of these wonderful, surreal, weird places are actually the hallucinations of people in a mental institute, and the porter is going around and talking to each of them and or telling you their story. As I was writing this, I got informed of Alan Moore's book Lost Girls, which I think is a similar thing. I bought it and I've got it on my shelf still, and it's sealed. It's a hardback, so it's a sealed copy, because I didn't want to open it and have it influence the story I was writing or telling. And then it's kind of become a thing now that it's just there, safe. I think I talk about this with Alan when he was on the podcast many moons ago in the first four or five episodes. But yeah, and then ages later, because again, it's fun to have such a tight framework to work to. A lot of the other tracks, particularly when it's all complete fiction, I can go anywhere I want, anywhere the rhyme pattern takes me, all that kind of thing, just go off on tangents. Whereas I really like when there's a really specific story you have to tell that you have to then fit into tight syllable rhymes. And that's how this one worked. And it was a lot of fun. It's one that people have always said there should be a music video for, and they're right. But again, you've got to bear in mind, we always had fuck all budget for music videos, and we don't have the budget to rent or create a whole mental hospital, essentially. And then all the weird, surreal stuff that we'd have to do to make it interesting, rather than just looking at Alice in Wonderland in a padded cell. But yeah, that was a lot of fun. And I was really pleased with how it turned out. And I told Dan I wanted a beat that's kind of... He's doing the rounds. He's walking the... He's doing... Yeah, he's walking the corridors... And doing his thing and telling his story. So, yeah, that's how that one came about. Next up is Gold Teeth. And before we get into it, so this started with the hook that Dan made, that rappers wear bling because they want to look pretty, and I loved it. And I started going off on tangents. There's a bit on the second verse that's referencing or rewriting or stealing Ferra Monch's rhyme pattern from Get the Fuck Up. New York City, gritty, committee, pity the fool that acts shitty in the midst of the dawn, they're witty. Get the fuck up. But then we were working on it, and I'd hit up Flux Pavilion. I think about doing a remix. And again, and it was another one where it said it'd be up for working on something with us. So Dan and Flux went back and forth and produced this. And it was the first time Dan had really collaborated with another producer, and I think both of them were nervous, because again, particularly when you're self-taught, you think that secretly you don't know what you're fucking doing, or you'll get to someone else who knows a specific area that you don't know and you'll look like you're really ignorant. But I think it came out amazingly, and Flux added stuff that Dan can't do. Flux was also, you know, I got annoyed a few times because he wanted my rhymes to match the beat in a certain way. And I have quite a loose delivery. You know, I start a couple of lines, I get some words in before the bar starts. And he was kind of like, no, this isn't on beat. And I'm like, it is on beat. But then, you know, the way we got it, I couldn't be happier with. So let's have a listen. I'll skip to the and try and find the Ferro Monch stolen bit. That's Dan Lissac saying that, and then it's glitched out. Fuck. I'm trying to find that bit now. So that's the din 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 din. Get the fuck up. So New York City Gritty. Let me try and get it in line. So the Ferro Monch one is New York City Gritty Committee Pity the Fools That Act Shitty in the Midst of the Calm They Witty or whatever it is. Get the fuck up. There we go. The video for this was a whole lot of fun. We had one day, we borrowed a room upstairs at the Railway Pub in Southend. Stu Whiffin's in the video. Chris, I think, is in the video. Or was Chris not there that day? I'm not sure. Loads of people in the video. DJ Destruction, my mate Simo, Amy from the Mum and Mama podcast, all of our pals in there. And we wanted basically to make it a pound in the pint jar strip club because of the cliche of rap videos in strip clubs. So me and I'd never been to a pound in the pint jar strip club before that. And me and Tom, who as said is the cameraman and co-director, went to a couple and felt incredibly uncomfortable, but got our research and got it all to look right. And yeah, we got amazing people involved. All the three different girls were up for being the strippers there. One of them, a really funny moment recently, actually, Carol Whiffin, Stu Whiffin's wife, who gets mentioned on the Drunk Cast and stuff like that every now and then, was working in a new office, and she mentions, no, one of the people she was working with mentioned Scroobius Pip, and she was like, oh, he's my mate. And she was like, oh, shit. So she said, I was in one of his videos because she was the main stripper, Raina. So she was like, I was in one of his videos. So she brings the video up and there's Stu, her husband, which she had no idea about this video particularly, or certainly did remember it happening. So yeah, she's like, oh, there's my husband as the barman in this strip club video. And yeah, everyone involved was amazing. A local agency called I Am Epic hooked us up with some amazing people to be in it. Because again, up until then, pretty much all of our videos are people either that are our mates or we've just put a tweet out or whatever else. And I remember the security guard in particular, like we could have just put him in every scene because his face just was so good and told so many stories. And then here's the interesting part, actually. I can't remember what inspired it. I think there was a fan-made video for a Pusha T song that had a lot of scribbling over the top. So I wanted that to happen. So I hit up Mr. Heggie, who's been on the podcast and I've now had tattoos by, because I was a fan of his artwork. And I said, do you have any knowledge of this kind of thing? And he blagged it. He kind of went, yeah. And I now know that he had no knowledge at all, but because he saw this as an exciting opportunity, he did research, he downloaded the program that would work for it, he learnt it, and then did all this amazing scribbling and gold kind of imagery over the top of the video that made it look amazing. And yeah, he'd just learned that from scratch because I'd hit him up and he was like, yeah. We could do that. So yeah, that's Gold Teeth. It was another single, I think. So was it just Stunner, Gold Teeth, and You Will See Me, I think, were the singles? Yeah, because they're the ones that have got videos, of course. Let's move on to the next one. Another one I've got very little memory of. So Heroism and Entity on this, I barely remember because we never did them live. Oh yeah, I remember this one. Yes, so basically, this one came about. It's another one that I tried to get something working, I think, on Logic of Chance. And it just wasn't working. Or maybe on Distraction Pieces, even. But the idea was how our parents see us. So if you see, again, a simple example is like a goth who's got all kind of cyber dogged up in the streets. You see them in a very specific way, but their mum or dad will still see them as the little kid that they once were. So this one was about kind of seeing through that. I did a project in... I did photography and film and some film study things at Wolverhampton University. I dropped out after a year. But one of the shoots I did was called Identity/Entity. And it was two photos or two pieces. And the first was a load of different photos. And it was me. The project had to be a self-portrait project. So there was tons of different pictures of me in different get-ups, different outfits, recreating that famous Michael Caine photo with the cigarette in his mouth, recreating the taxi driver thing, and loads of other stuff. And that was Identity. And then the second photo was me stood there stark bollock naked, and that was Entity. And it was the thing of our identity is all these masks that we put on to build up this character, and then here's the entity, I strip bare. And that had obviously stuck with me over these years because that's kind of what this song's about. It's about us stripped bare is us as a little kid before we've developed our identity, before we've had the experiences, got into the music, the films, the art, all these different things that build to become our identity. That was us as a little kid. So, yeah, I use numerous examples in this of people that you will judge the book by the cover and not actually realise that there's a lot more going on under the surface. So yeah, that's Entity. Let's move on to the second from last song, the penultimate song. This is one that, again, annoyingly keep having songs on these behind the albums that remain relevant politically. So yeah, basically a song encouraging violent uprising. thanks guys, I've been Scroobius Pip. I mean, it's what it is, man. I think we've seen it a lot recently when there has been violent reaction in America of late. People have been saying, oh, violence is never the answer. I don't know if it is never the answer. It's never the first choice. It should never be the first choice or the first answer. But if you repeatedly do things the peaceful way and get ignored, the example given there is the 2 million man march, or 2 million march, or whatever it was, after the Iraq war. 2 million people took to the streets to say, we don't support this. And then we all went home and nothing happened. As I mentioned in the lyric there, protests where it's sanctioned, here's where you're allowed to protest so you don't cause any problem. It's backwards and it's dumb, because how's that going to have any impact? So again, to be clear, I don't think violence or disruption or vandalism should ever be the first choice. But if you've gone the way that they've told you to go numerous times and it's made no difference, then you need to try something else. Or at least it's understandable. My belief on violence for change is, at the least, I understand it, and at the most, I support it. Or at the least, it's understandable. At the most, it's straight up necessary. How's that? Because, yeah, people also avoid the fact that violence was part of the abolition of slavery. Violence was part of the end of segregation and all sorts in loads of different countries. It should never be the first choice, but at times it has been necessary in history and it has been successful. At times, peaceful protest hasn't. I was watching a thing the other night and they were talking about how Martin Luther King, you know, he was peaceful. Yeah, he was peaceful right up until the point where he was shot in the face and killed for his peaceful beliefs. You know, it's tough. It's tough. So that's what that song's about. And again, it's depressing that it remains irrelevant. It's also about the way our democracy works. The fact that that first time the Tories got in, everyone was like, they didn't get the majority. This isn't fair. They shouldn't be in. This is outrageous. I tell you what, next time we are voting them out. They didn't get voted in this time. So why are you waiting? It seems odd to me to wait. But equally, I also always talk online about the way our democracy is set up is unfair and biased and doesn't work. Therefore, it's childish to just kick off when it doesn't go your way. The past load of elections, prior to the election, I've asked online and wherever else if there's any protests I can go and join against our current political system. And no one's offered me anything. When the left has then lost, here's the protest. It's on Sunday. It's this. It's that. It's like, well, no. You can't support a system and then get pissed off when it doesn't go your way. If the left had won, you wouldn't have been protesting. So you can't protest now. The system, if the left had won in a broken system, is the point. You should be as angry because the system is broken. You've not got there legitimately either. And that's what that song's about. It's about the emptiness of our activism at times these days. And that's changed a lot since that song as well. A lot of the Black Lives Matter stuff, violent uprising has forced change, or at the very least has forced things to the front of people's discussion. And yeah, you can argue it's forced it to turn the front negatively. But again, it's getting these things out there and discussed. Ripping down a statue and throwing it in the river got a discussion about statues happening, and it hadn't been, you know. So anyway, that's what that song's about. On to the last one. You Will See Me. I mean, hopefully you know this one. It's, as I mentioned earlier, this is one of my proudest moments musically. I love the beat. I'm really pleased with how the lyrics came out, Story of the Lyrics, it's another one where the album was finished. And then I was hanging out with my mate, Kelly, and she'd just been screwed over by a dickhead person that she was seeing. And I kind of wrote this to motivate her, because career-wise and artistically, she was killing it at that point and has continued to. So it was kind of a, don't be annoyed. Like, the fact is, you're about to be literally on billboards. So it's going to be unavoidable that this person who treated you as if you're throwaway has made a mistake. So I wrote it for her. But again, I drew from my own experiences and my own emotions and anger in previous relationships. Dan was not annoyed, but again, was like typical Pip, because the first verse is the most relatable thing ever. And then the second verse, I turn it into a song essentially about genocide and destroying the whole world out of anger and revenge. Someone online pointed out as well that it's a reply to Letter from God to Man. And man, I wish I'd written it with that in mind. But you listen to it word for word, it works perfectly. So if you listen, and Letter from God to Man and You Will See Me are two of my proudest things. So I like the idea of them sitting together in that way. The video, again, I said, one of the reasons I'm so pleased with this is I really liked how the lyrics came out. I loved the beat. But I loved all of it. I think the video is one of our best videos, you know, directing that. And we won an award for it, me and Tom and Dan, learning the song backwards and making it all work. Again, did we have 1 day or 2 days? I think we had 2 days to shoot it all. No, it might have been 1 day. I think it was 1 day to set up and build everything and 1 day to shoot, maybe. And my mate Ollie, he was at Harrow Theatre, and it was a weekday where we could use their space, and they had a set that was like a room, and we messed everything up and added stuff. So yeah, all just done low-key and guerrilla, but I think it looked really good and I was really pleased and proud of it. This song, I forgot to mention earlier, with Terminal, that was the one track I used to stutter on live, because I had to get really into the moment and the story, and it didn't have kind of a tight driven pattern. I'd get so into the fragile character, I think, that I wouldn't be rapper Scroobius Pip anymore, and I'd stutter every now and then. And this is another one that live, it's one of my favorites to perform, but it was really hard to perform because I had to get into a really emotionally draining place to perform it. And genuinely, my mum was worried about me because she saw a couple of the shows, and where I went in the performance of this to get that emotion was kind of exhausting to do night after night. Because again, when we tour, it's 5 or 6 nights a week, and I'd proper go there, man. Again, it's one of the things that made a few mates who are actors kind of push me into acting, because they were like, you know, you do acting on stage. Like, where you go in this song and that song isn't your real emotion. You're acting and you're finding those. And again, it's not a true story. So it isn't like I'm just picturing this particular breakup or anything. I'm getting into this character who is that angry. And yeah, it felt like a huge sense of achievement to perform it, but it was equally exhausting. I'd end, like, the beat goes crazy at the end, and I'd just go to the back of the stage and kind of take a minute as Dan cuts it up. Like most songs where Dan cuts it up, I'll either leave the stage and enjoy it or be on the stage and enjoy it. This was one where I'd go to the back of the stage and kind of just take a minute, because it's, yeah, it was emotionally draining to perform night after night. But man, did I love getting to do that with something I've co-created with my mate Dan, and that the crowd connects to so much, and that I know, because we had an amazing crew on that tour with lighting and sound and everything else, I know that emotion is going to be conveyed and it's going to get across in the room. We were doing rooms, the biggest rooms were like 2,000 probably. I think Ireland might have been 3,000, but we were doing rooms that were just at that point where you can get it across to everyone in the room. Do you know what I mean? It's not lost rolling out into an arena or whatever, because we didn't have screens or anything. We couldn't afford that shit. But yeah, this was a big one. And I said before, I'll talk about one of the reasons I may never make music again. And I also said I'd refer it to Terminal because of the idea of having this obsession with going out on top. Now, the last ever live gig that I did, it was me and Dan, and it was at Bestival. And Bestival is like our home crowd. So Rob the Bank and Sunday Best, who run Bestival, were our label for these three albums me and Dan did together. And we had these moments at Bestival that were just breakthrough moments for us. There was one where we were on the main stage at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon, and we happened to not clash with people. So we had literally tens of thousands of people, at least 20,000. Robbie always used to say it was 30 or 40,000, all there for our set. And it was a timing thing. It was just a perfect storm. So Bestival meant the world to us. And we performed this knowing it was our last gig, announcing it as our last gig. And there was tens of thousands of people there inside the tent and outside the tent who all knew it was our last performance. Rob the Bank introduced us on stage, which he'd never done before. And we went out and performed. My family were there. I think some of Dan's family were there. Loads of friends were there. And man, it was hugely emotional. I came off stage for the... I'm welling up now. I came off stage at the end of Letter from God to Man for the bit, which through my whole career is probably my favourite thing that I got to do all the time, was just watch Dan be Dan Lesac, you know, do his thing. I mean, there's other times I watched Dan be Dan Lesac and it was the worst moment of my career because Dan can get rambunctious. But no, just watching him do his thing was always, without fail, an absolute pleasure. And getting to watch that kind of for the last time on that song, or with me involved, I guess. I've seen Dan live since and adored it. But man, it was emotional to be there and watch that. And then, yeah, to come backstage and know that was that. But because of that, that was a perfect going out on top, right? That's the perfect, yes, we did this. Now if we get offered to do a gig, a while after that, we got offered a few different big money gigs on Freshers Weeks because they always pay well because student unions have budgets and whatever. And I was always like, nah, I'm not removing that from my last ever gig. Like, that's perfect at the moment as the last ever show, because everyone in that crowd, there wasn't anyone there who just stumbled along or were just there because something's happening. They all had followed this mad journey that we'd had over only like a 6-year period. So that meant the world. And that kind of comes up here as well. The last song on my last record is possibly my proudest bit of work and one of our most critically acclaimed and fan favourites. And how rare is that? Like, legit, how many people, artists that you're a fan of, was their most recent album your favourite? You're generally into stuff from the older days or whatever else. And that's still the case a lot of the time with this album, I'm sure. But this last track in particular, everyone who's a fan of us who knows of this track has this in their top, like, 5 or 6. And for me, as said, it's kind of probably joint number one with Letter from God to Man and Introduction. Maybe Stunner in there. But again, I don't really rank these things. It's weird. It's my own stuff. But I'm fucking proud of it, I'll tell you that. And I take no shame in that pride. So yeah, it was kind of, how mad to get to go out on that. How perfect. And if I do anything new now, I go out on whatever this new thing is. And again, as I said, you always feel the new stuff is the best stuff you've done because that's why you're putting it out. But that doesn't always hold up in time. As I said, there's things on this record, on all the records I've done, there's things I look back on now, as you will have heard on these behind the albums. And I go, yeah, it's not the best. It's all right. It's not the best. So to have some distance now, and still feel that the last ever track on the last album is one of my proudest moments, that's going out on top, man. And it was amazing doing Tim's listening party, because there was a lot of people there who tuned in. So Tim's listening party was a thing that Tim Burgess does on Twitter. He'll pick albums, have the artist tweet along, everyone will press play at the same time, and we'll all listen. So you get a lot of people who haven't heard of you before because they're just fans of the listening parties and they're coming along to hear a new record. And the reaction was biggest on that night to You Will See Me. So again, to get that reaction to the last song, I don't know, it's a hell of a way to go out, you know? So yeah, I think that's another reason I'm not... And as I've said numerous times, the main reason I'm not making any more music is I've not got any desire to. I'm really excited about other things I'm doing at the moment, writing-wise and creativity-wise. I've never felt more fulfilled or more creative in my life. So yeah, but there is also that thing of this, that it's like, man, gig-wise, song-wise, I've got to go out on top. And I did it with the club night as well. I did my club night for 10 years, essentially. And a little bit into that last year, we started to see a bit of a dip and we started to go, the last couple of years, really, is this really, do we still want to keep doing this? And then in the last 6 months of that last year, it picked up and every night was rammed. The crowd was perfect. And that's why I decided that we had to end it then. We had to go out on top before it starts to potentially dip again. Go out on our terms and go, look, we've smashed the fuck out of this. It's unprecedented that you get to do a club night for 10 years. Let's walk away on top. Let's choose when we go rather than get kicked out. And man, did COVID make that the right time to go. By pure chance, we went out in 2019. And then 2020 happened and fuck, a lot of places have seen their doors closed. So yeah, that's it. That's Repent, Replenish, Repeat. An album I'm dead proud of. And an album that comes in at 36 minutes and 5 seconds. I like a short record. I do feel every album I've done, looking back now, has got some room to trim the fat. Even on this one, really, I said Heroism and Entity. I think they're people like them, but they're not songs that I particularly remember or have a particular emotional connection to. Maybe me and Dan should do at some point in the future, do a best of vinyl and all that of the three records and just trim the fat and go with the ones that we think are all gold. But it's weird. It's all personal taste, isn't it? So, yeah. Anyway, I'm rambling now. Thank you for tuning in. It's been a pleasure as ever. As I said, you can go and have a listen to this on Spotify or iTunes or wherever else and watch the music videos and all that business. Nice one. And big love for tuning in on all these album playbacks. They've been really good fun to do. If this is your first one, then we've got the No Commercial Breaks one, we've got the Angles one, we've got the Distraction Pieces one, and we've got the Logic of Chance one. So check them all out. They're a lot of fun. All right. See you later. Bye.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. That's been a week of nostalgia for you guys, and I think we need that at times like this every now and then. You know, hope you enjoyed this. If you know someone who's a Lesac versus Pip fan, and as you know, that maybe doesn't follow the podcast or whatever, but you think they might enjoy this and get some cool things out of it, then pass it along. Pass it along and spread the word. I'll be back next week with actual guests. I won't be sitting in my studio on my own, just with a speaker, listening to my own music and telling you about it. But yeah, we'll see you all next week. Until then, stay... I need to think of new ones. It's become a challenge now. Stay sanitary. Stay soft. Softness is an endearing quality, regardless of your gender. Stay steely, you know, a steely focus and determination. Keep that in these times. I mean, I don't know why I'm trying to think of any more. All you need to do is make sure you stay sane, stay safe, and stay fucking sexy. Ta-ta.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.